We have an audio clip. Christian, do you have the audio clip? All right, let's play it. Our next guest, Martha Atkins, is up. I want you to hear a little bit from her TED Talk that garnered so much attention and is the reason I asked her on today.
When I meet people at parties for the first time, think how much fun that is. What do you do for a living? Me and the sex girl and the bacteria guy can all go together to the party. So I meet them, and this happens. It is, gosh, that's really nice. I'm going to go get a drink, and I never see them again. Or something happens like happened at lunch today. Let me tell you a story. I've been scared to tell anybody because I didn't want anybody to think I was crazy. And I say, my goodness, I want to hear your story. Please tell me your story. It's these stories, yours and mine, that are going to bring comfort and hope and calm as we help the ones we love leave this world and as it is our own time to go. So if you have had a deathbed vision experience, a witness experience with somebody you love, would you raise your hand? Okay. I would like for you in the next 48 hours to tell somebody about that. The more we tell our stories, the more we're going to eradicate this fear. And it's really important.
That's a little bit from a TED Talk. I watched the entire thing. I was so moved and really impressed by our next guest, Dr. Martha Atkins, who is the founder and chief executive officer of something called Atkinosity, where she works with individuals who are dying and the families who love them. Dr. Atkins says that her work in the world is to help people be less afraid of death and dying. Dr. Martha Atkins, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Hello.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
I'm so delighted to have you. Tell me, I'm using the word doctor. Are you a medical doctor?
I'm not a medical doctor. I have a PhD in counselor education.
Okay, wonderful. I would like you to call me Lisa. May I call you Martha for this interview? Would that
please,
be all right?
Please do.
You're a very warm and approachable person, at least in your TED Talk. So Martha, tell us a little bit about what your work is on a day-to-day basis, not speaking about it, but the doing of it. How do you work with the dying?
The doing of it. So most recently I was with a woman named Glee, and I spent about 4 months with her. I spent about 2 years with her, but I spent 4 months of the last part of her life. And it was day-to-day talking about the changes in her body, feeling into her pain, and going to the edges of it, going to the sides of it, letting her make meaning of it however she needed to make meaning of it. And this is what I mean by that. Some people, it's the pain of the cancer. Some people, it's a pain that happened earlier in their life, and they feel like that's part of what's happening for them. There's a lot of conversation about family and what the person is leaving behind. Mm-hmm. And we talk about that, how they've, what good they've done and how they've helped people, a little bit about what hasn't gone right, but I really try to move people towards what has gone right and, help them have an experience that is as meaningful and peaceful as it can be.
So Martha Atkins, 203-333-9422 is our number. So Martha, help me understand one of the things I thought was so illuminating about your talk is you do talk about the fact that so many people have had near-death experiences, and there do seem to be some universal accounts of them, or relatively universal accounts of them, and that if we believe those accounts, it should do much to eliminate or at least diminish our fear of dying.
So this is that meaning making part. We get to decide what we believe. So I work with deathbed visions, which are a little bit different than near death experiences.
Okay.
So the near death experiences are people who leave their bodies in the white light often, and they have people that come and see them, and they tell them to come back in their bodies. People who are dying have those sometimes. Lots of times, for the people that I work with, I get with them a little bit later, and they're not so communicative anymore. So if I'm at the bedside with my family member and my family member reaches up their arm towards something, I can either pull their arm down and tell them they're being dumb or tell them not to put their arm up, or I can ask them what they're reaching for. And sometimes they'll be able to tell me and sometimes they won't.
You mean sometimes the dying person? Yes, seems to be reaching for something. Okay, let me hear about this. Yeah?
Yes. So, or they see somebody at the end of their bed, mm-hmm. or they see an angel.
Yep.
And just like somebody who's got dementia, there used to be, we got to orient them to place and time. And we know now that that's not the best thing to do. If somebody is in a dementia state and they're back in 1942, we're not going to try to bring them back to 2022. So when somebody's dying, if they see somebody at the end of their bed, I'm not going to say, you don't see anybody there. Nobody else can see anybody there. I'm going to say, who do you see? What do you see? And oftentimes they'll describe the person, sometimes not be able to say the name, say they don't recognize them, but they look familiar. That's something that happens often. And what I have noticed as I've worked with people is there's this trajectory of experience that happens. So early on, people will see, I call them friendlies, and I do that on purpose. So friendlies are people that the person doesn't recognize. And then a little bit later, they'll start to recognize people, family members. And then a little bit later, if they had a good relationship with a caregiver, they'll often see that caregiver, like a parent or grandparent. If they didn't have a good relationship with that person, somebody else will show up to help them along. And lots of times the person is able to explain all that and say that. Sometimes they can't. I do have people that come to me and say, "Never, my person didn't do any of those things." And I get it. I'm sorry. Sorry you didn't see those things. I make up that I can see things when somebody is at end of life that probably other people can't. Hospice people who are in the job all the time will see things that other family members don't see because
really?
They don't recognize everything that's happening.
I see.
So here's an analogy. In Hawaii, the indigenous people used to be able to read the water. They could put their hands in the water. They could look at the water and they could know when the tides were changing. And the rest of us just look at the water and go, that's a really pretty day. So for hospice
really?
people that do death and dying work all the time,
yeah.
there's a knowing that happens. You're around it so much and you recognize when people are moving deeper into the process. You recognize when they say particular things or start to use particular metaphors that they're in their dying experience.
We're chatting with Dr. Martha Atkins, 203-333-9422. I've witnessed two people in my life dying. One was my grandmother, my own grandmother, and it was a very brief witness. People didn't expect her to die. It was very interesting. In the cases of my grandmother and the cases of my husband's grandmothers, I very firmly believe they chose exactly when they wanted to die. They were women...
Yeah.
Well into their 90s, they were not particularly sickly. They waited until their entire family was together for a holiday and an occasion. And in both these instances, afterwards, they took to bed and died. I'm serious.
Isn't it brilliant?
It's incredible,
actually.
Yes, I believe
actually. You. Yes.
They're totally incredible.
It is.
So with my grandma, Syl, she was in a hospital bed, and all of us were in Florida around New Year's for the Christmas holiday, and we were all there. All the grandchildren, her daughters, everybody was there. And I visited her that day in the hospital, and her two daughters were with her in the hospital, and she told them to go to the cafeteria, and she decided to die while her younger daughter couldn't see her die because she knew that that would freak out her younger daughter. But I, as her granddaughter, had seen her earlier in the day, Martha, and she had, she did something which I later recognized as death throes. She waved her hands a lot. She flailed around a lot. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Her body sort of spasmed. And I remember distinctly thinking that, and it wasn't an eagle or anything crazy like that, a bird, but I just remember in my greater perception, thinking the window was open and something's flying by. Don't ask me why I thought that, but that's what I was thinking.
I love that.
And anyway, yes. she and so her hands were flailing, and she wasn't particularly conscious. In other words, she wasn't really communicating, but she was definitely dying, and nobody really recognized that. At the time, I didn't know what I was looking at. I left. As I said, my aunt and my mother went to the cafeteria because she sort of, at that point, waved them to go eat. And that's when she died. And that's when she died. But the other experience I wanted to tell you, we're chatting with Dr. Martha Atkins, was much more prolonged. My sister, Jill Zarin, had a beloved husband, Bobby. And he had a cancer that eventually lodged in his brain. You know, just was one of these ugly, growing cancers. And in his last week of life in the hospital, with all of us keeping vigil 24/7 and Jill knitting a blanket for him, and it was unbelievable. At the beginning of the week, Martha, he not only never wanted to die, this I believe, because he comes back all the time and talks to us. He didn't want to go. He didn't think it was time. He was angry. But he saw his mother, and he didn't like his mother. And he was afraid to be with his mother. And watching him not want to be with his mother was really, I'll never forget it, Martha, in my life. And he kept talking, I did not want to go be with his mother. And then at the end of the week, his grandmother came. I think he called her Babka or Baba, something like that. And he started talking to her. And his whole body posture relaxed and changed, and he was ready to go.
Yes, she was the one. He was waiting for Babka.
Yeah.
So beautiful. So beautiful. So for us, when it's our time to go, this tells me, because I'm with you, there is a measure of control that people have. I've seen it over and over and over. There are beings, visions, our internal psyche, I don't know what it is that makes that happen, but there's something that happens that brings these visions to us to help us go. And it's just a miraculous thing. And I love it so much. And I love to hear the stories.
Should we be afraid to die, Martha?
Boy, that's a hard question. The death part, I think the death part, not so much. Dying can be hard. Mm. And this is one of the things we need to talk with our families about and why we need to talk about it, because we need to tell people what we want. We need to have very specific conversations about whether you want to be on life support someday or whether you want to be kept alive and whether you want your family member to fight if somebody says you want to need to go on hospice. It's really important to have those conversations, and it's specific family members. Some family members are not going to be able to do what you need. So you need to pick the people, family members or not, who really can stand toe-to-toe and let people know what you need and that they've been told, so that you can have the kind of end-of-life experience you want to have.
So let's continue our chat with Dr. Martha Atkins at 203-333-9422. Your chance to call in if you'd like. Dr. Martha Atkins talks about more to dying than meets the eye. Her TED Talk is a must. You can find it on TEDx. Martha, welcome back to the show. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
So let's get into some of our choices as we're dying. We get a terminal illness diagnosis, and maybe it depends what that diagnosis is. What if it's something horrid that we know will be neurodegeneratively horrible, like ALS or something like that? What are our choices along the way? Do we have any?
Well, some people choose to have as much treatment for as long as they can, regardless of what anybody says. And I have no... people can do what they want. It really matters about what's happening in their life. Over and over again, I see parents who get really difficult diagnoses, and they're told to go home and get on hospice, and they say no because they want to stay alive for their children, and they want to be around a little bit longer. And I love that for them, and I love that for their kids. There are other people who get those diagnoses, and they're tired, and they go ahead and go on to hospice. There are other people in the U.S. There's 12, I think it's 12 states right now where there is an opportunity to have an end of life experience that is your choice at your time. So some people decide to stop eating. They don't want to live any longer, so they make a decision to stop eating. And in some states, you can take a cocktail with a number of physicians. Washington, I think it's three physicians you have to have that sign off that say that you have a terminal illness, and you can take a cocktail, and that will end your life. And
have
that
you
is
seen
becoming,
people do that? Have you seen
have
people
not,
actually?
I
you have not.
I have not. No, that I have not been part of that yet. There's a great documentary on Netflix. I'll have to find the name of it. That has a really beautiful man, and I appreciate that he shared his experience. He and his whole family, and they he took a cocktail. His wife was with him, and I love that they were willing to share that, because for some people they'll see that and they're saying, no, there's no way in the world I would ever do that, and other people would say, yeah. And it seems like he did have an ALS diagnosis, and he didn't want to be a burden. That is often what I hear. I don't want to be a burden to people.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, what happened with Robin Williams. He hanged himself because he had a diagnosis of Lewy body dementia. He had suffered with depression throughout his life, and he didn't want that for him. Lewy body dementia is a one-way street, Martha.
It is, it's a tough one.
It's a tough one.
It is a tough one.
And the world misses Robin Williams, but I guess he felt that this was, this is what he wanted to do and the way he wanted to do it. Let's go to the callers. Diane of Milford. Diane, welcome. You're on the air with Dr. Martha Atkins, and we're talking about dying. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I was, my father passed away about 30 years ago, and the family and I were standing around his bed in the hospital, and he told me, in his way, which he had a little bit of profanity in there, to move away from the window. And that has lived with me for 31 years. I think he might have seen, I didn't know, I didn't have the know-all to ask him what he saw. But I think in my mind, he saw my mother. And right after that, he passed away.
Yes. And he wanted you to screw over so he could see clearly what he needed to see.
Yes.
Brilliant.
And that's lived with me forever. It's amazing. And it made me feel better. It made it a little bit easier. Yeah.
Did it make it easier for you to think about your own death one day, Diane?
It's still a scary thing for me.
Yeah.
I think the way that I'm going to die is the scariest part.
Well, that is. Right? I mean, I think about that a lot. You know, I'm a probate judge, so I look at death certificates every single day, and I see the myriad different ways that people pass. I mean, last week alone in my court, somebody passed from renal cancer, somebody passed from blunt force trauma, somebody passed. Right. I mean, it's all different ways that people pass, and I was thinking, universally, we all come out through somebody's belly, right? We're all coming out. Sometimes we're opened up through the belly. Sometimes we come out through the birth canal. But we're all making that same journey. We're all born from some woman somewhere in a belly. And yet, we all exit in different ways. We're all out of here in completely different ways.
Yeah,
I always think about that.
Most of us are alone when it happens, and that's the scary part.
Well,
you know,
that is true. A lot of times, but the journey itself requires us to be alone. It's our soul, our own journey. And speaking of the soul, thank you, Diane. Speaking of the soul, Dr. Martha Atkins, what do you think about the soul, the survivability of that essence of us after our body passes?
Yeah, I don't know.
You don't know.
I've heard story after story after story, and they give me hope that there is something. And I see, I can be at somebody's bedside and feel into their body and feel if they're there or not. That sounds really weird, but there's an awareness that people who are dying sometimes have. It feels like they go away and then they come back. And as they're moving farther and farther into the process, they go farther and farther away. Mm. And then they come back. I don't know if that's soul. I don't know if that's biological. Maybe it's all of it. But it's really fun to think about. It's really fun to think about. And I want to say about Diane's comment, we die alone. I don't know if that's true either. If we, if her dad was seeing somebody out the window, even though they were in the room, he was seeing somebody. And if they hadn't been there, he wouldn't have been alone. There's something, whether it's our brain or it's spirit or something, that comes to help us go.
Randy from Milford as well. Randy, you're on the air with Dr. Martha Atkins. Hello and good morning.
Hi, Lisa. How's it going?
Great. What's your comment or question for Martha?
Well, I guess it's more to let you know that movie documentary you guys are talking about was Waiting to Die.
Yes, thank you.
It was absolutely an amazing movie. I mean, it didn't really change my thoughts on it. I mean, I just think it's a personal decision. And I mean, it's good, I guess, that decisions are involved. But I'm curious what you guys think, because a lot of people who advocate for, I don't know what to call it, for what we're talking about, say that it should be part of the 10th Amendment.
In other words, that people should have a right to decide about dying. In other words, a human euthanasia kind of thing. Is that what you mean, Randy?
Yeah.
Essentially. And yeah. As a libertarian, I don't really see why government should have much to do with that. Unless, of course, somebody is like, you know, has like a mental illness or something that drives them to suicide, which is, of course, bad. But in the case of terminal illnesses, I don't see any reason why anybody shouldn't make that choice. And, you know, what should the government? The government isn't impacted by it. It's immediate family and such.
Mm, that's a good point, Randy. What do you think, Martha?
Yeah, it's changing. You know, there are more states that are open to that, and there are more states that have committees that are working to make this possible for people to have the choice. Physicians have a really hard – the physicians I've talked to, their job is to save people, and this doesn't
That's
quite
right.
jive with what they signed up for. So it's a difficult conversation for them that trickles down to us. But it's becoming more prevalent.
Let me ask you something, Martha Atkins. Do you think do you make moral judgments about people in terms of making a decision about when and how to die?
No, heavens no.
You do not. Okay.
It's their decision to do what they want to do with their body. I mean, I don't have a horse in that race.
And how do you, when family members ask you, is this the end? And how do I know? Are they really dying? What do you look at? How do you answer that question?
So you look at the trend of what's been happening over the weeks before and what's changing and how much they're eating and then that they're not eating and then that they're not drinking and they're not able to communicate any longer and not talk. They're communicating, but they're not talking. It's erroneous of us to think that we can look at somebody and know when they're going to die. Except at the very last few moments, there's some things that happen with the body, but I hear often and used to myself, look at somebody and go, yeah, they'll probably be dead in 24 hours. And it's, we just don't know. People, like you were saying about your grandmother, there's control there. Mm-hmm. And people will then, my friend Glee was asleep, 3 or 4 or 5 days and then came back for several weeks and then did the same thing and then did the same thing. And
wow.
Yeah. And it's exhausting for the people around.
Yes.
You want to be supportive and you're ready for them to go. And people feel guilty about that. And I'll just throw that out because it is a common experience.
Dorothy from Fairfield. This is our last call. Dorothy, hi, you're on the air with Martha Atkins.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. I believe that we are not alone, and I had a grandmother who died with a smile on her face, and
yes.
I experienced where my father had been like asleep, And then he knew, he opened his eyes, one tear came down, we were saying the rosary. And he used to say that now and at the hour of our death. It was really surreal, and it was peaceful, and he knew we were there. Even though, you know, before that he like had been asleep. I have heard more things. My own mother, when she passed, they pick who they want to be with, Lisa. It was like, it's amazing.
You mean on the other side they pick who they're going to be with? Is that what you mean, Dorothy?
She had three children. Her son who took care of her and was, you know, she made sure that he wasn't there. God bless her.
I see.
And then my sister, who was the middle child and had not had that time with her here on earth with her, she was the one she picked. And with me, I had been there in the morning.
Okay.
And when I arrived, just a few minutes after she passed, my sister was crying. And I hugged her and I said, Mom wanted you to be here, Sue.
Oh.
And her spirit,
sweet.
I am a very spiritual person and God has given me a gift. Her body was empty. The soul, the spirit had already. And I know, I looked out the window. There was the heliport, right at St. Vincent's, and I knew my dad had come to get her, and I know what he said, like, what took you so long? I've been waiting for you. So that's the happy memory. She and my father, their spirits going up.
Martha, thank you, Dorothy.
Beautiful.
Martha, we're going to have to run because the bell is going to clock us off, but I want to ask you, I have another question from a listener. Is it true that someone will not die because of an unresolved matter? Have you ever seen that, where people hold on to try and resolve things on earth?
I have seen both. I've seen people hold on, and I've seen people hold on because it's not resolved, and then hold on because it's not resolved, but then just let it go.
Let it go.
Martha Atkins,
thank you so much for being on the show today. What a pleasure.